She has approximately 6 years of experience working at CDC and in a variety of public health activities. Laura has led several important initiatives looking at various topics of interest using IIS data, including flu coverage reports and some recent investigations with the HIB pattern from IIS data. So Laura is going to be speaking to us on some very important issues about denominator clarifications and challenges that we as an IIS community need to start thinking about and wrestling with. Laura?
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be able to speak with you today. I'd like to begin by acknowledging my colleagues who helped prepare this presentation, including Vicky Papaduka from the New York Citywide Immunization Registry, and Karen Cullen and Diana Bartlett from CDC. I'm actually going to begin my presentation today with a small confession. Although I'm an epidemiologist by training, and I'm admittedly kind of nerdy in my love of data and my love of working with data, presentations that begin with methodological considerations are the ones I personally find to be the least inspiring in my work. And for those of you in the audience who are not fellow lovers of data, this sentiment may only be amplified. But having said that, I am excited to share with you what I think is an important aspect of our collective efforts to ensure that all children are protected from vaccine-preventable diseases by accurately assessing the vaccine coverage in our populations. And I hope by the end of this presentation, I will have convinced all of you why this is an important thing that we should all be thinking about. We all assess ourselves internally and are evaluated externally, at least in part, by assessing the vaccine coverage in the populations that we serve. We're all striving to reach the Healthy People 2010 objectives. Vaccine coverage estimates are shared with our peers and the scientific community and with the public in a variety of publications, and many immunization programs have their own internal immunization coverage goals and objectives. We measure vaccine coverage in the general population, in special populations, including those at high risk and in geographic pockets of need, and we assess vaccine coverage in our provider practices. And we accomplish this using a variety of data sources, just a sum of which are the National Immunization Survey, the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System, the National Health Interview Survey, and increasingly, we're beginning to use our IIS. Despite the data sources that we may be using, but particularly with IIS, we are challenged to ensure that our vaccine coverage estimates are accurate, that they are comparable, and that they provide meaningful information to help guide our resources and our efforts to most effectively serve the populations. Now, you may be asking yourself, how important is this really? How much of a difference does a different denominator really make in our vaccine coverage estimates? And this graph shows the 43133 vaccine coverage series, or vaccine series coverage, among 19 to 35 month olds in three different IIS. And although I haven't named them here, these data do reflect the actual experiences of three IIS based on the 2007 IIS annual report data that are submitted to CDC each year. Now, if we were evaluating these three sites, we might conclude, among other things, that these three sites are they're comparable. They may be in similar stages of development in their IIS and in serving their communities. And imagine for a moment that you're responsible for allocating resources to these three IIS. If that was your responsibility and you were looking at these data, you might conclude that you would allocate resources equally across the sites. However, if we took the same three sites and we took the same number of children who have completed the 43133 vaccine series, among 19 to 35 month olds, and we used a different denominator to calculate the coverage at each of these sites, we would end up with this picture, which tells a very different story. Site one may be doing better than we expected, having reached 80% coverage in their population, and site three may be doing much worse and may be in need of additional assistance in their program. So the choice of denominator really does make a difference in what information we're gathering and how we can use that information. If, again, you were responsible for allocating resources to these three IIS, and these are the data that you're presented with, the decision that you make might be quite different. So let's talk a minute about what these denominators are. There are many denominators that we can use, but three of the most common are to use all children enrolled in the IIS. And by enrolled, I simply mean the presence of a child demographic record in the IIS, regardless of the presence or absence of vaccine information within that record. Many sites use all children enrolled in the IIS with two or more immunizations recorded in the system. And of course, we have census-based denominators for use. There are pros and cons to each of these. I'm not going to discuss them in an exhaustive list, but I do want to highlight just some of the pros and cons in the next few slides. Thinking first about all children enrolled in the IIS. If we have a population-based immunization information system that's receiving regular downloads of birth certificate data or birthing data from birthing hospitals, and that so that it's able to account for its population base using birthing data, and it's able to account for in-migration into its system when children move into the jurisdiction after birth, they see a vaccine provider, that provider submits the data to an IIS, and a new child record is established. In this way, using all children enrolled in the IIS can provide more than other IIS-based denominators, the opportunity to capture all children that reside in the jurisdiction, including those children who are unimmunized. We all are concerned about those children that fall through the cracks, who are not being seen by a vaccine provider, and so this denominator may capture those children more accurately. However, we mentioned in-migration and accounting for that, but we didn't talk about out-migration. And for those of us working with immunization information systems, those moved or gone elsewhere, or the infamous MOGI issue is one of our biggest challenges. And for sites that have limited protocols for identifying children who have left their jurisdiction and moved somewhere else and are unable to remove those children from their denominators when they're calculating vaccine coverage, you can overinflate your denominator, which results in an underestimate of vaccine coverage. So we need to be careful about that. Thinking for a moment about all children enrolled in the IIS that have at least two immunizations recorded in the system, there are a couple of reasons why some sites prefer to use this denominator. Some sites assume that children who have zero or only one immunization in the registry may have moved out of the jurisdiction shortly after birth, which is not uncommon for people to be mobile at that time in that stage of life. People also sometimes assume that children with zero or one immunization only in the IIS may not have actually ever resided in that jurisdiction, but may have come into the jurisdiction to deliver and then went back home. So they'd want to exclude these children from their IIS-based denominator because they don't have the opportunity to contribute to the numerator. They're not residing in the region to have their vaccine data entered into the system. Similarly, some sites assume that children with zero or one immunization only in the registry may be seeing providers who don't participate in the IIS. And in that case, you wouldn't want them in your denominator because they wouldn't have, the opportunity to be contributing to your numerator with their vaccine data. However, on the flip side, using this denominator automatically excludes those children who have fallen through the cracks and who are not being immunized, despite the fact that they may actually reside in your jurisdiction. And this can lead to an overestimate of your vaccine coverage. And lastly, thinking about census for a moment, one of the benefits of using census is that it's a consistent methodology that's used across all the sites, and it's unaffected by IIS participation issues. However, it's limited to certain age groups which don't always correspond to the age groups that we're interested in for our vaccine-related analyses. And of course, it's conducted only once every 10 years, and those interim estimates may or may not accurately reflect the true population. Ideally, we would want all three of these denominators to be approximately equal. In this circumstance, the IIS would be accounting for all births in its population from vital records or from birthing hospitals. It would be accounting for in-migration into its jurisdiction as new children move into the area, and it can create new child records when those children see vaccine providers, and it would be able to account for the out-migration, that MOGI issue that we are all plagued by identifying and removing the children who have left their jurisdiction from vaccine coverage estimates. And of course, we would have all providers participating in our IIS, as we all hope will someday be happening, and so all children will have at least 2 immunizations recorded in the system within the first few months of life. And for the purposes of the exercises we're going to go through today, we're going to have to make the assumption that the census estimates are accurate. I know for some that's a big assumption, but for the purposes of our exercises today, that's what we will be assuming. And this ideal situation is not outside of our reach. These data are reflective of one particular IIS and their 43133 vaccine series coverage estimates among 19 to 35 month olds. We'll just call this site A, but they are actual data from the 2007 annual report. And you can see the vaccine coverage estimate using all children enrolled in the denominator in blue, all children enrolled with 2 or more immunizations as the denominator in purple, and the census-based denominator is in green. So while our ideal situation is not unattainable, it is unfortunately rare. There are currently only 6 IIS for which the maximum difference between these 3 estimates is less than 5 percentage points. When we looked at the 2007 IIS annual report data, there were very clearly 3 common patterns that we saw. And so instead of showing you all the data from all the sites, I just wanted to highlight these 3 common patterns and talk a little bit about what they show us and what they tell us about what may be happening at an IIS. So we'll start with site B. I've diplomatically decided not to call out any of the IIS and their data in this presentation. So we have site B. And if we calculated the 43133 vaccine series coverage among the 19 to 35-month-olds, like we have been doing, using all children enrolled with at least 2 immunizations recorded in the registry as the denominator, this is the coverage we would end up with. And we would end up over 80%, and we'd feel pretty good about that. However, if we calculated it using all enrolled in the IIS as the denominator or census as the denominator, we would end up with a different picture. And the difference between the IIS-based denominator in this circumstance and the census-based denominator coverage estimates is 20 percentage points, and that's not insignificant. That makes a big difference when you're thinking about your system and where you are and where you need to be. So what this tells us is that the number of children that are counted by the census is much larger than the number of children that are counted in the IIS. And for some, that's a little counterintuitive. A larger denominator results in a smaller coverage estimate. But again, we have more children counted by our census than we have counted by our IIS. And there are a couple of reasons that this happens. For some IIS, they may not be fully population-based. Some IIS receive their birthing data from birthing hospitals rather than vital records. And if not all hospitals are participating or they haven't accounted for births in non-traditional birthing centers and home births, that can make a difference in our denominator because those children would be captured by the census, but not necessarily by the IIS. In another scenario, some sites have in their neighboring jurisdiction, perhaps just right on their border, a large metropolitan area that has high quality healthcare. And they may have a portion of their population going across the border to deliver and to receive care. And so in that way, you would end up with children who are not counted in your IIS because they didn't birth in your state and they didn't receive vaccinations in your state, but they would be counted by the census because they reside there. And the last reason why we see this kind of pattern is that parents may opt out of the registry, and for some of our IIS that still have the requirement to opt in, we may have a smaller proportion of parents opting into the registry. And in this case, again, children would be counted by the census because they reside in the region, but wouldn't be counted by the IIS. Moving on to site C, this is the second common pattern that we see, and it's actually the opposite problem. We have a higher coverage estimate using census-based data and a lower coverage estimate using our IIS, which tells us that the number of children counted in the IIS is higher than the number of children in the census. And the most common reason that we see this type of pattern is because some IIS are challenged to deduplicate their child records. You can imagine that a child, for example, is delivered in a hospital, receives their birth dose of hepatitis B, and that vital record is sent to the IIS and initiates a child record there in the system. And at that 2-month visit, when they go see their primary provider, to receive their vaccinations, that provider will submit another record for that child. And if the IAS is challenged to reconcile that this is the same child and create one child record, you can overcount the number of children who actually reside in your area. And that can lower the coverage estimate based on using an all-enrolled denominator in your system. The next common pattern, which is actually by far the most common pattern that we see in IIS data, is reflected here in Site D, where we have coverage based on all enrolled as a denominator and coverage based on the census being really very similar, suggesting that the IIS is doing a pretty good job of counting the number of children in their area. However, when we count when we calculate our coverage using all children enrolled in the IIS with at least two immunizations recorded in the system, we get a much higher coverage rate. And this is usually due to low participation in the IIS. So we don't have as many providers submitting data to the IIS to have enough children having at least two immunizations recorded in the system. So those are the three common patterns that we see in IIS when we use these three different denominators and some of the reasons we may be seeing these kinds of patterns. I want to switch gears for just one quick second and give a nod to the adolescents. This challenge is kind of amplified in the adolescent population for a couple of reasons, and I'm not going to talk about this in detail, but I did want to highlight that there are, again, three denominators that we can use for adolescent-based coverage estimates using our IIS data. Those include all adolescents enrolled in our IIS, school-based denominators from the National Center for Education Statistics, and again, we have census-based denominators. And I'm not going to go through these data in particular, but I just wanted to highlight that there are three common patterns that we see again, reflected in sites E, F, and G, and that the disparity between the three different estimates is, again, very common. So what do we do now? We've looked at this information, and I think everyone wants to know what's the right answer. Which denominator are we supposed to be using? And we have a couple of different options. One is a one-size-fits-all approach. We as an IIS community could say, this is the most appropriate denominator, everybody should use it, and this is how we're going to calculate our vaccine coverage. And we've kind of already shown that that can really lead to some misinformation. And if our vaccine coverage estimates don't inform us accurately about the experiences that our IIS and our population are having, we can't focus our efforts in the most appropriate ways. So a one-size-fits-all approach has some drawbacks in that way. However, it does have some benefits. When you are comparing IIS-based coverage, or vaccine coverage really in general, across different sites, if you're using different methodologies across each of those sites, it makes the interpretation of those differences very difficult. We could use a tailored approach where we recognize that each IIS has a unique set of circumstances and their denominator should reflect the circumstances that each IIS faces. Again, that may provide a more accurate reflection of what's really happening in their population, but it can make comparisons difficult. I have purposefully not given a recommendation during my presentation about which denominator we should use, and I have a couple of reasons for doing that. But it occurs to me that this is not the first time the IIS community has been faced with a challenge. We have multiple diverse systems at multiple stages of development, and you need to find common ground for how to move forward with an issue. And that's through the development of some guidelines and standards for the IIS community. And I just wanted to review very quickly some of the guidelines and standards that already exist to support our work. These include what we could call functional standards, including the 12 functional standards that CDC published several years ago, and the core data elements that were published by the National Vaccine Advisory Committee. We have performance and operations guidelines, including the Programmatic Registry Operations Workgroup documents and the Immunization Program Operations Manual, so many acronyms to remember. We have, as our technology has advanced, data exchange standards, including HL7, to guide that process. And most recently, we have some data processing standards that have come out of the Modeling of Immunization Registries Operations Workgroup documents, the MIRAW documents, including vaccine deduplication, data quality, and our infamous SMOGI issue. And so I am in this presentation proposing that now may have come the time where we need some guidelines to help us with the analysis of our IIS-based data. IIS data are being used increasingly, as Abby mentioned, to assess vaccine coverage, to monitor vaccine use during shortages, to assess the uptake of new vaccines, to identify pockets of need, and to assess special populations. And so with multiple diverse systems, many of whom don't have their own analytic staff to be mulling over these issues and determining the best way to move forward, now may be the time where we want to consider developing some guidelines to assist all IIS to use their data most effectively in their analyses. So in conclusion, I'd like us to consider the possibility that now may be the time to develop these standards to support the analysis of IIS-based data, and to recognize that the priority remains to support IIS to implement the full spectrum of guidelines and standards that have been published and put forth to help them mature to their fullest potential to protect children from vaccine-preventable diseases and to support the breadth of immunization program goals and objectives. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. That was a great presentation. Even in spite of our fire emergency delay, we still have plenty of times for questions and comments. So a couple mics here. So please come on up and say who you are and where you're from and who's your question for. Tom.
Tom Meritz, Wisconsin. And I've got 2 points. The first is kind of a recommendation, observation, and it kind of goes in hand with something Abigail had in her presentation, and something I brought up to Gary yesterday, and that is that, and it's been remiss of me not to bring this up in years gone by, but I think it would be good if CDC, for the next NIC and those in the future, came out with a survey of the states on what they would like to see at these presentations, for one, and then CDC also, you know, as far as abstract goes and what, you know, what presentations you want us to present. You know, in the past, we present our successes. You know, you look around at all the presentations and it's presentations on successes, and I think we all glean from that, but if you could be leading the way as to what the people, you know, states and such actually need and what would be to your benefit, I think that would help everybody even more. Not just point out the successes, but point out the successes with information, you know, that is vitally needed. The other is it's kind of a mention on you know, do we really need registries? What are the usefulness of registries? And more, do they work? You know, a registry in its simplest sense is no more than a database that's collecting and sharing data. It's the tools that you build onto that registry, the assessment and benchmark reporting capabilities, the recall and reminder capabilities, and the forecasting. I'm going to point out quickly one quick observation of one of our largest healthcare providers in Wisconsin. They came on 4 years ago. Their immunization rates for 80 separate facilities were at 57%. We were able to show them that through the benchmark. So they had a tool that they could use themselves to look at their immunization rates. The big deal was the registry also showed them that their missed opportunity rate was at 23%, okay? Without the registry, they wouldn't have known that. The first thing they did is stated that all nurses needed to look at the forecast. And the forecast doesn't have to be within the registry. It could be an EMR, you know, forecast that the registry provided or was there, but they had to look at the forecast. Missed opportunities went down to 5% in a year's time. Their immunization rates went up to 80% in that same year's time. Okay. The next thing they took on was then doing outreach through recall and reminder. Today there are 137 facilities. They've got a third of our state's population, and their combined immunization rates for the 19 to 35 month old group is 94.6% for 137 facilities. okay? A dozen or more of those facilities are at 100%. Without the tools within the registry, they could have never gotten there, and they could have never gotten to that population. But you gotta have the tools, and you gotta be able to show, you know, your providers how to use those tools adequately, and get providers that wanna use the tools as well.
Yeah, I think that's a good comment. I think one of the concern or perspectives is we certainly are seeing lots of success stories of its of registry use at the provider level for increasing local coverages there within their practice, and all of those are good things. I think a lot of what we're trying to see here is what else can they be used to apply to measure at the kind of population or public health level beyond just an individual provider. And I think these are some of the issues that we have to kind of wrestle with as a community as far as coming up with denominators as well as seeing how they fit into overall analytic frameworks and so forth. So I think it is something we're starting to see more and more of a need for, and certainly not that's not to diminish the existing role that they've had in the past and will continue to have in the future for that very specific provider-based services and features and functions that we all know and love, but also what can they also do to help with some of these other monitoring needs that are here, and we're certainly trying to bring these ideas out and have some effort to wrestle with them and try to come up with some local solutions for some of the challenges that we hear. I don't know if our panelists would have any other comments, but that was just my perspective to that comment. Do you have any other?
No, it's good to hear about how states are using these and that it's so useful. I guess, the whole systematic review is that, you know, I think, you know, a lot of you do know about the task force and the guide, and you know, I guess in some states, in some scenarios, it is helpful to have, you know, to show that there's been a systematic review. And so we just wanted to update you, kind of what was going on with that. Not to, you know, it's really the most important thing is that the states are using their registries to do stuff.
Sue, is that you?
Yes, it is me.
It's hard to see up here.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm Sue Salkowitz. I'm a consultant, and I'm also here on the ERA board. And I want to comment on Laura's very provocative presentation, because as I was listening to presentations today, especially about adolescent health, I realized that many registries started out as six and under, and there was no particular focus on an age group higher than that, so everything was from the birth record and looking at those kinds of things. And then in looking at adolescents, there are a number of adolescents that have aged into a registry as they have increased the scope of ages that are in there, either up to 18, up to 21, or even lifetime. And so some of them would have aged into it, but may have not been under continuous care of the same provider or lived in the same place. They just stayed in the database from the time they were six till they get to be 11 or something like that. And then you get an influx of new children that may come in through school-based or something like that. So a tremendous challenge of dealing with populations between the ages that there is an immunization requirement, although the flu requirement may change that. And then when you look at lifetime registries, and it's also the focus on older adults with the pneumo and the Zostavax and stuff like that, those people probably weren't in any kind of immunization information system from the time they were, say, 19, if they were on Medicaid, till the time they're 65 and get a pneumo shot or something like that. So there may have to be some way to segment age groups within the IIS to do some kinds of studies, because in some of the age groups, you probably will never have the entire population, you know, and you want to focus on the age groups where there are immunization requirements that need to be met. So I think that's kind of a challenge in terms of researchers in considering how the registries have grown, because you're not going to have a registry which you say, okay, we'll take all ages, and everybody of all ages suddenly comes into your IIS. So very, very provocative.
I didn't mention too much. Thank you, Sue. That, I really appreciate those comments, and it's something that I've been thinking about with the adolescents, and IIS kind of tend to fall into two categories with their adolescents. They've either been around long enough to have all of these children aging into the adolescent population, regardless of whether or not they may still live there and still be receiving care. And then there's the other group of IIS that haven't been around long enough, so the only adolescents that are in their systems are those who are getting vaccinated. And so using an IIS-based denominator for adolescents is really challenging and is very specific to the stage of longevity of the IIS and its maturity for addressing MOGI issues. And so I think it's very problematic as there's a growing interest in looking at adolescent vaccinations. Sue, you mentioned the influenza coverage, and you know, this with this being the first flu season where the recommendation is for 6 months to 18 years of age, you know, we in the IIS support branch were asked, can you use your registries to look at flu coverage for adolescents for this year so we know how we're doing? And sadly, we kind of had to give a possible no. We'd love to, but we're just not sure that the data are complete enough. But at this stage, at least for this season, this is the only data source that we have for this. As NIS teen continues on, they'll be able to look at that as well. But it's a real challenge to meet the growing demand for adolescent information with our IIS at being at different stages of maturity.
There's one more challenge in the flu season with the increasing number of drugstores having walk-in clinics for shots. Probably adolescents will use those more for flu than now the older people that traditionally use them. And so the need to include those minute clinics or drugstore-based clinics may become a necessity for IISs.
Excellent point. Thanks, Sue.
Are there any other? Oh, go ahead. Mary Beth, since you.
So I just want to give a plug for, until we get to the point of having standards for the tailored approach versus the one-size-fits-all method of approaching these issues, because there's so much variety, not only from a statutory perspective with who's had a legislative mandate versus voluntary registry, but also in terms of our own business rules, because some registries will take everything in, and including encouraging sources to send their full population, whether those patients have shots or not, versus other IISs who actually will stop a record at the door if there are not IMs attached. And so that's going to affect some wild variations in our denominators. So although I applaud the efforts to have some standardization, or at the very least, some transparency of what our methods are, until then, I think we've got to at least look at our population-based data with those issues in mind.
I absolutely agree, Mary Beth. It's a really challenging issue to have so many systems that are really at different stages of maturity and who work in different ways. But I think you hit on a key point, and that's the transparency. And I think as we begin this process, the more that we understand what the strengths and limitations are of each approach will help us to better interpret what it is that we're looking at. But I think eventually we'll get there.
We got time for one more question. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Ann Kraft. Work for the Navy. One of the questions that I have, I've been hearing, we look at our immunization tracking system, and then when we close the gap, we look at the network-provided care through coding data. And so care received outside of our services, but not necessarily in our ITS, but we were able to identify those individuals by name or by social, and find out whether they were actually covered by looking at coding data, and that doesn't seem to be what other people have the capability to do. And is that because that people have found it not to be helpful, or?
Could you repeat that? I had a hard time hearing.
Okay. We have our immunization tracking system, Alta. And so with the people that are in that system, or through DEERS or whatever the feed-in for the system is, and then when we're like looking at influenza, we have our population that is captured by the service we provide them. And then for those that are eligible for us but don't get the service from us, we then look at the gap and do a gap analysis based upon those that got it provided outside, but the coding information came in through billing for CPT services provided outward. So we're actually able to tell how many of our people weren't actually vaccinated between the two. Are we the only one that's doing that? Or is it inherently wrong? I mean, it seems to be working for us.
I think I'd have to understand a little bit more about what it is that you're doing. Maybe we can talk afterwards, but maybe other IIS can talk about whether or not they're using a similar method to look at their data. I saw a hand out there.
All right, I just want to, you know, when you mentioned about the influenza and being asked for population-based, I just think we have to be cautious that there may be unrealistic expectations placed upon the registry as we grow in recognition as to what we're doing, and the fact that we aren't population-based and we can't surface all things is a concern, and we have to make more people aware of that. Take care of our target first, which was the children and the less than six, and focus on them, and then grow accordingly, and somehow educate the others as to what we realistically can do. And as to your presentations, I still think, you know, you have to think of the question that's being asked to determine the denominator that's appropriate to use, and I still think probably a combination of both of those are appropriate, because you need to represent how many of the children, and you can do measurements as to how many fall out of the different categories to more accurately represent what's going on. I give caution to deferring to one fits all for what we want to do, and I like the way the registry is right now measuring it, where you do see how much of the population is in your registry in general, and then how many have two or more shots. Because that seems the best way to measure who is relatively active in your system, and then come up with maybe the measurements for adolescents using the MOGIs to determine timeliness and if they're still part of it. So, Colin.
One of the things that I didn't touch on is the fact that about a quarter of the IIS that are currently functioning are not population-based. And I kind of avoided that altogether and just kind of talked about it from a population-based perspective. But that adds another layer of complexity to this issue.
Can I ask?
Real quick. I don't want the people to fuss at me. Go ahead.
Okay, this is for Abigail. I'm just wondering whether this review process is just perhaps a little too early or a little too premature for the IISs, given that I think the most mature are roughly 10 years old, and there's a lot of other registries that are just starting. So I'm just kind of wondering whether the timing is right, and I think things are happening more now for the registries to get their results published, but there isn't a lot of published data.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. And, you know, that's why the original review, you know, registries were not even looked at, because it was way too early. And there was a lot of discussion this time whether we wanted to include registries, and it was decided to include them. But that's a very good point. There's a lot of stuff coming out in the last few years, and probably, you know, when we do our update and we look at registries again, we're going to see a ton of published studies. So, I mean, it is. It's like borderline right now. Things are really moving fast. And maybe we should have waited. Maybe that's a good point. I don't know. But, you know, this is a consensus that decided to move forward. So, anyway, thanks for the comment.
Great. Please join me thanking our speakers for their time.